My name is E. Stanley Mitchell. People call me Stan. Today's date is Wednesday, September 30th, 2020. And I am currently in the state of Nevada in the city of Henderson. My conversation partner's name is Regina Mitchell, my lovely wife. And we have been married 35 years.
And I'm Regina Mitchell. I am currently in Nevada, or Henderson, Nevada. Today is Wednesday, September 30th, 2020. And my conversation partner is my husband of 35 years, E. Stanley Mitchell, AKA Stan.
You know, I was thinking about our marriage the other day, and I was thinking that our marriage, our life together is based on a chance meeting and a piece of gum.
Yeah.
And I wondered, when I walked into the room when we first met, did you notice me?
I am so sorry. I did not, because, you know, I didn't see you. I only saw you once you sat down. Uh-oh, you're wiping your forehead.
No, I'm not.
I only saw you when you came and sat next to me.
Okay.
Does that help clear?
That clears it up.
After all these years.
After all these years. So, when I came into the room on that day, in December of 1983, December 21st of 1983, I came into the room, and across the room I saw you, and I thought, who is that? Oh, never mind. I don't want to be in any other relationship, so I'm going to ignore that. But because my mother had asked me to be a part of the play, I just sucked it all up and thought, I'm going to make this work. So when I came into that area where you were sitting and I sat down next to you, I had absolutely no intention of even saying hi to you. I just wanted to get it over with, because you were such a beautiful woman. I thought, no, I'm not into that. Not now. Okay. I'm too busy with school. You know, I was in the last semester of my junior year, and I was looking forward to graduating, not meeting somebody new.
Yeah. Funny, so funny that you had all that going on in your mind. And there I sat, just a person, a girl. Your mom asked me to be in the play, and I was just sitting waiting for my turn. I had a clueless that all that was going on in your brain, because none of it was happening in my brain.
So what was happening in your brain?
I was just sitting there waiting for my next part, my part to go on stage.
Wow.
And there you were being traumatized.
You never gave me a second thought?
No. I'm so sorry. All these years. But no, I didn't. I was just a person, just a girl that started going to the church.
Wow.
And I was just sitting there waiting for my part. And you came and sat next to me. And then you asked me if I wanted some gum.
Well, okay, so you had no idea who else was going to be in the play with you.
No.
So when my mother asked you to be in the play, she didn't say, this is what's going to happen.
No.
None of that.
No.
You're kidding.
No.
So all you knew is you were a solitary human being.
No. I had the script. I knew there were going to be other people there.
Okay.
But I had no idea that who was going to be. I wasn't into that. I just did my, I always, well, you know me by now, honey. I just do my part.
Okay. So you were just doing your part.
I was doing my part. Okay. Yes.
Okay.
All right.
Well, I asked you, did you want some gum? So let me ask you this. When I reached into my pocket and pulled out that piece of gum,
yeah,
did you see the piece of gum in my hand?
Only when you extended it to me.
So when I pulled it out, you never saw it?
No.
Oh my goodness.
No, I didn't.
Okay.
No, I didn't.
Okay.
No.
So when I offered you the piece of gum, what made you take it out of my hand?
Because you said, "Do I want some?" And I said, "Yes." And I took it. And now you can.
Okay, so you took it.
Yes.
Okay. And so what made you tear it into three pieces?
I've always shared. I took the gum and tore it and ripped it into three pieces because there was three of us sitting next to each other. There was three of us. So I was always been taught to share. I'm the oldest. I share everything. So if you gave me a piece of gum, it was only right in my mind that maybe I could share it with you and share it with the guy next to us.
Wow.
So I tore it into three pieces so all of us can have some gum.
Okay. Did you notice that I turned my chair towards you after that?
I didn't know that your chair was turned away from me.
Oh.
See, all this was going on in your head. Nothing. It didn't have anything to do with me.
So what happened is when I came in the room and sat next to you, I turned my chair away from you because I wanted to have nothing to do with you.
But see, that was all in your head.
I know, because yeah. I knew the potential of what would happen if I engaged with you, and I didn't want to engage with
and
you.
And you did, and guess what? Here
I
we
know.
Are, 35 years later.
A chance meeting and a piece of gum. That's it.
That's it.
And I thought to myself, when I came in the room, she's so pretty. If I talk to her, it's over. I'm gonna be committed to this, and I didn't want a commitment. But then you broke that piece of gum in three pieces, and my mind was blown.
Your heart. I had your heart.
My heart was in your hand.
Yeah.
And so when I asked you for your number, what did you think?
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. You're handsome.
Thank you.
And you're very nice. And your hands were very soft.
So the soft hands did it.
Soft hands did it.
So it should be a chance meeting, a piece of gum, and
soft hands.
So when I called you 4 days later, what was the first thing you thought?
Well, that's nice. He's going to come pick me up. We're going to go on a date. A real date. I get a chance to go on a real date with a guy.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, what do you mean by a real date?
I had never gone on a date.
No. Okay, wait a minute. Okay, this is new. What do you mean you've never gone on a date?
Well, like a date, like a real date. I don't know how to explain it. It's just that anticipation of the newness, and you're going to come pick me up, and we're just going to go out. I don't know. It was just everything was so new.
So you were 22 years old, right?
Yeah.
And that was the first time someone called you and said, "I'm going to come pick you up, and we're going to go on a date."
Well, no. I mean, I've had guys that called and said, "Hey, let's go kick it."
Oh, okay. But you mean like
I didn't want to
formal,
kick it.
Okay. So
I wanted to just kind of be in, yeah, like a real date.
Okay.
Like my parents are going to meet you, and we're going to get in a car and ride, and it was going to be a real date with a real nice guy, a
wow.
nice guy.
Oh, okay.
You're a nice guy.
Thank you.
You weren't like a drugs or, you know. That kind of stuff. That's what I was used to.
Okay. Okay. So straight lace.
No, a nice guy.
A nice guy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when we started driving and I just said, "I'm going to just drive." And I started driving down towards San Diego.
Yeah.
What were you thinking?
Oh, this is nice. I really like him.
Really?
Yeah, I did. And you're playing this really different music. I wasn't used to that kind of music. Everything was so great. It was so wonderful. I was like in a fantasy land. But I loved it. I knew it was real. I knew it was real. So, but.
Okay, so I remember as I was driving down the road, I was thinking to myself, okay, I'm going to just drive. And once I get to a certain point, I'm going to turn around and come back. But then you said, "So when are we going to stop?"
Yeah.
What made you say that?
Well, because I wanted to stop so I can talk to you face to face and you could talk to me. Because as long as you were driving, you couldn't turn and look at me. I wanted to stop and turn my body and look at you and you look at me and we could just have a conversation rather than you looking, of course, on the road. And we, you know, I wanted your face.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so then we turn into Huntington Beach, and I actually, when you said that, when you said stop, I thought, wow, oh my goodness, what's gonna happen next? I really got very nervous.
You thought I was gonna kiss you?
I didn't know what you were
doing.
I didn't know what you were going to do.
I thought,
Lord have mercy, she wants me to stop. Like, because I had never been on a date with someone that in the first week of talking to you, I thought, wow, this is an amazing, really, I had been in a lot of relationships, but the start of this one was like something different. And so when you said stop, it just made me nervous. I was like a little kid. I was like a little kid who thought I was going to get the first kiss from a little girl.
Oh, sorry.
And I just thought, no, I was so scared. And so when I stopped and we talked, it felt like I'd known you for all my life.
Right?
We had never not known each other. Like we'd known each other forever.
And then so, what made you ask me to marry you?
Well, you mean
3 weeks later.
Well, we went to solving and we were sitting on that bench and I thought, I really love this girl. I mean, it was like a love that I'd never known before. Mm-hmm. I thought, I love her. I don't even know her, but I love her. She's like the companion of my life that I didn't even know I was looking for.
Right.
And so I was sitting there and I thought, you know, let me just tell her that I've been thinking about marriage for the last 2 weeks since I met her. And I said, I've been thinking about marriage.
Yes.
And then you said, I know.
I said, I know. I have too. And I would marry you.
And I said, well, then let's get married.
And we said, okay.
But wait, our parents and everybody's going to freak out because we've only known each other for a couple of weeks.
Oh, well,
so what are we going to do?
It's okay.
Oh, my goodness.
It's okay. And we did. We handled it.
And
but we love our parents. We respect our parents. We respected their wishes.
Yes.
And we did wait. We waited a year and a half.
That's right.
And they were able to see that we really loved each other. And that we weren't some stupid little kids.
Right.
And then my parents were able to see that you could provide for me.
Right.
Right? And your mom and your dad could see that I was good for you.
That's right. That's right.
And over the course of time, they really got the chance to see
it. They got a chance to see it.
And then
they got a chance to see everything. And so we were married.
Yeah.
And, you know, we had our careers.
Yes.
And,
careers.
You know, I was going to go back to school for my master's at that time. Forget that. Mm-hmm. All that time. Mm-hmm. And then I remember thinking, wait a minute. I mean, we really love God and we really spend a lot of time. And so that's when I decided to go back to ministry school.
Yeah.
And that started a whole new life.
You did. And to be a pastor's wife, that was going to be a whole new journey for me as a pastor's wife.
So when I told you, when I said, honey, I feel like I'm called to do ministry. I feel like the urge is to do ministry and to be a pastor and do this the rest of my life. What was your first thought?
Uh-oh, we're going to be poor.
Why? In your mind, pastors were poor?
Well, I knew that their income came from the members.
Right.
And so you don't know what your congregation is going to be. But it was just a flighty thing. And it was just one of those things that came and gone. And then once I realized what ministry was about, I never thought about that again.
So do you remember what I told you when you asked me, are we going to be poor?
No.
You don't remember?
No.
Oh, I said, honey, I have a college degree. I'm an architect. I can always go back on that.
Yeah, that's right. You did. Okay.
You said, is our little girl going to have a granny dress and big tennis shoes walking around? I said, come on.
No.
So what about when I said, okay, all right, I'm finished with ministry school. Now, I feel like we're called to go to Canada, pastor. What did you think?
It's fun. I'm ready. Because you remember when I said to you, if you don't hurry up and we don't sell this house, I'm going to leave going to Canada without you.
I know.
Right? Because I was right. ready. I was on board to go.
You did.
So I thought this is where the Lord wanted us to go.
And I had to get myself together in a hurry and close that business and get going. Because I didn't want you to go without me.
Okay. So now we're in Canada. We're in Canada. Point Roberts, Washington. Sweet little peninsula.
Wow.
Living in Point Roberts, Washington.
That was a lot of fun. Yeah. What's your fondest memory of Point Roberts?
Oh, hearing the ocean at night. And then hearing you come up the drive on our little pebble road. I always knew it was you coming in at night.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That's right, because I would be driving into Canada to go to the office and then coming back through the border to come home.
To come home, exactly.
And I remember that I remember the sound as I was driving up the pebble drive and the wheels of the car and pebbles sort of crushing underneath, and then pulling into the driveway, getting out of the car, going to the front door, and you opening the front door and giving me a big hug.
Wow.
I remember that. It, without fail, you were waiting for me at the front door.
Yeah.
Not so much unlike you do now when I come home from work, you wait for me at the front door. Mm-hmm. That was a beautiful time.
It was. So 15 years we were there in Canada.
15 years we did ministry
in British
Canada.
Columbia.
Wow. What's the most outstanding thing about doing ministry in Canada that you remember?
Learning the different personalities of people. That was really a development in my mental awareness of people and how to communicate well with people.
Right.
That was a huge lesson for me.
Especially people of a different culture.
Yes, a different culture being Canadians.
Right, Canadians. Because a lot of people think that Canadians are just Americans across the border.
Right. No.
They don't realize that they're a whole different culture of people.
And it is. It's a beautiful culture. Similar. Foods, similar, but not.
Right.
You have to get used to it.
Right.
But yes, I remember.
Because it was predominantly British-based and Scottish-based or French-based.
Yes. So and you, then Eastern.
And then the East Indian population.
Yes.
That's right.
Yes.
That was wonderful experience living in Canada.
Yes.
And you know, the ironic thing about living in Canada is that because we moved to Canada, that opened the doors for us to travel around the world.
Yes.
Okay. Had we never moved to Canada, I don't think we would have ever traveled like we did.
No, because it allowed us to be free to be open to that cross-border travel.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, and so how did you feel when I said, honey, culinary school. Then I went to culinary school.
Right.
Yes.
You went to culinary school. Right. I asked you, what would you do if you could do anything in the world right now? Do you remember your answer?
Yes. You said, if you didn't have to worry about money or you or time, what would I do?
Right.
I said,
money or me
yes,
or time.
Exactly.
Yes.
And I said, I would like to learn more about professional cooking. And you said, okay.
Yeah.
And you found the resources.
Well, I asked you, I said, does that mean you want to become a chef? And you said, yeah.
Yes.
And I said, well, then let me find the best school that you can go to.
Yes.
And that took me to Seattle.
Yes. So it took me out of British Columbia, because I couldn't go to school or work in British Columbia.
Right, because I had to work
your work visa. And so I did. I went to Seattle Culinary Arts.
What was that like, leaving me in Canada and going to live in Seattle by yourself?
Lonely, but I knew I had a job to do, and I knew I needed to do this for myself. And because this is what I wanted. So I thought about you all the time. Well, of course, you called me, you came to see me.
Yeah, I did. On the weekends.
Yeah, on the weekends. So
that was fun. That was like dating again.
It was like dating again, right? Because you picked me up on a Thursday, we drive to Canada.
Yes.
We do the ministry, and you drive me back to Seattle.
And I go,
so there
back
we go.
There. That's right. It was like dating. And all of them got to live together
right.
for 3 days.
Exactly. So now, at the end of my culinary school, I applied for a British fellowship.
Yes, you did.
And I did not know that I was going to get it because it was a Pacific Northwest fellowship. And I didn't tell you that I had applied.
Right.
But then after all the interviews, I was one of the two selected. How did you feel when I came home and said, honey, I'm going to be going to Great Britain and leaving in 2 weeks? And I'm sorry I didn't tell you because I didn't think I was going to get it.
Well, I'll tell you. You know, you've always kind of slightly reminded me of Lucille Ball of I Love Lucy. You always have some harebrained idea going on that, you know, takes me by surprise. They're all good, but they're just a little shocking at times. Mm-hmm. So when you said that, I thought, wait, did I miss something? How did we get from graduating from culinary school to now you're going off to live in Europe? What happened? What did I miss? That's what I kept thinking to myself. Somebody forgot to tell me something.
Yeah.
But you know, because of our relationship and how it started and where it's been, you know, over the years and how we've trusted each other, mm-hmm. you know, you trusted me. This is part of what my thinking was. You trusted me to leave your family and everyone behind and move to Canada with me because of something that was my vision. And so now you have a vision to go and learn under Master Chefs in Europe for a year. This is a long time without me. But I thought you trusted me, so I'm going to trust you.
So how do you think this speaks to marriages?
Well, you know, marriages is a balancing act. And I think that, you know, based on our experience, my experience with you, I think if two people really love each other and they really trust each other, and, you know, people use the word trust so frivolously. You know, oh, you don't trust me? Oh, I don't trust you either. That kind of thing. But I mean, when you trust a person at their core and you believe that everything that they do in their life, they are considering you. Like if you can believe that someone considers you in their decisions and in their thought processes, and that's the kind of trust you have with each other, then it makes all the difference in the world. It's like, you know, when we first got married and I said, I won't spend more than $50 on myself without asking you. Mm-hmm. And you said you would not spend $50 on yourself without asking me first. But we could spend whatever we wanted
on each other
yeah. without asking.
Yeah.
And that's been the same way for 35 years because I trust you to consider me. And you trust me to consider you in every decision that impacts our life. And it's almost every decision that we make on a daily basis impacts each other's lives. So I think that, you know, if two people can let down their guards and really trust each other in to that extent, to say, I trust that you're going to consider me in all of the things that you do. Just consider me. Think about me. So when you said you got a fellowship to go to Europe and you explained to me how it happened, and that you didn't think that you would get it, it made sense. And I thought, well, okay, instead of me getting my feathers ruffled, the thing to do is for me to ask God or pray about or think about or figure out a way that I can come visit you at least once a month.
Yeah.
While you're there.
So how did that experience? We were gone for 18 months.
That
experience
was the most amazing experience ever. I mean, look, we got to see all of Europe. Every time I think about it, whenever I would come, you'd have a trip planned for us. Okay, honey, let's go to the Scottish Highlands. Okay, honey, let's go to Inverness.
Yes.
Okay, honey, let's go to London.
Yes.
Okay, honey, let's move to London.
Yes.
And then I got to be there in London with you. So I got to experience You know, let's go to France. Let's go to Spain. Let's go
Barcelona.
Let's go to Barcelona.
Rome.
Let's go. I mean,
yeah.
I got to see all of that because I trusted you considered me in that decision. And it really had a benefit to my life. And then I was trying to figure out, okay, so now I'm traveling for ministry to Japan every couple of months and you're in Europe. And we're gonna make this work and we're gonna make it a benefit
amazing.
For our marriage, an
yeah.
amazing benefit for our marriage and become closer. I mean, what do you think? Do you think it made us closer or pulled us apart?
Oh no, it made us closer. We got a chance to see each other in a what people call a distance relationship.
Right.
Right?
Which we had never had.
We never had. Okay, so now I'm back in the States and I'm working under more amazing master chefs. And then we decide to come to Las Vegas for my job. And then I'm working here at the MGM Grand Hotel and Casino. And then I get sick.
Yeah, I mean, that was a big deal. You know, I mean, we went from being able to do everything that we wanted to do, everything. I mean, we could travel the world. And, you know, even when our daughter came, Journey came, we still traveled and she traveled with us and enjoyed the time. But when living here in Las Vegas, living in Henderson, shall I say, and you know, I remember the occasion when we're on the way to Arizona on that trip,
mm-hmm.
driving to Arizona, and you said your eyes are hurting. And you said, oh, they're hurting so bad. It feels like somebody's stabbing me in the eye. And I remember thinking, what is this? Well, I thought maybe something flew into your eye. And, you know, Karen was with us, your sister. And she thought, you know, maybe it was something that you ate or something. I mean, we were just trying to figure out all kinds of things of what it could be. And that whole trip we were away, you had towels wrapped around your head and you were mm-hmm. in constant pain trying to figure it out. And then we got back. And in 30 days, you went blind. That was a life-changing experience. But you know, I think that because our marriage bond has been so strong, and we realize that everything that we're in together, I thought, okay, she's blind. That's all right. We'll figure it out. And I remember taking you to doctor to find out exactly what was wrong. And he said, well, you know, 3 weeks from now, her vision should return. And 4 weeks and 6 weeks and 10 weeks and 2 months and 3 months
yeah.
and 8 months later.
Right. You feel like.
He says, we can't do anything else. We thought it was going to return. We're so sorry. And he had tears in his eyes.
Yeah.
He said, I'm sending you to UCLA. And that changed everything.
It did.
But I'm the innocent bystander sort of watching and ushering my wife through this and trying to make sure that our family's gonna be okay and wanting you to be okay. But what did it feel like for you to be blind? What from your point of view? What did to go blind that quickly? What did it feel like?
Well, I think it was naivete because I didn't understand. It happened so fast. I don't think that I had a chance to grasp what was going on. So all I could think of is, well, I'm still a wife. I'm still a mom. I still work. So let me still do these things. I just struggled a lot. I mean, although blindness is something that where your vision can't be corrected, I still had some functional vision.
Mm-hmm.
So I just depended on the functional vision that I had, which caused a strain on my body. When one member of your body is hurting, the rest of the body is really challenged.
Mm-hmm.
So I things just happen so fast, and you were so good to me that I almost didn't think I was blind. Like, I didn't think anything was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just knew that I had to do things differently and take my time doing things. And so what happened when, how did you feel when I had to leave my job of being a chef, of being working at the hotel, and then say, okay, I'm going to go to school full time? Another harebrained
idea.
Well,
you know, I remember that conversation, and I thought to myself, okay, so you lose your vision and become blind, and you go back to school. Who does that? But then I thought, oh, that's my wife. That's Lucy. She figures things out like that. She just decides that that's what she's going to do. Okay. And I thought, okay, well, then if you're going to go back to school, let me make every provision possible for you to be able to do it and do it successfully. Because I wanted you to be, if this is going to be your new life, and since this is your new life, let's make the absolute best of it.
And do you know that you read most of my books to me?
Now that you're saying that, I do now, but I didn't remember it then.
No, because it came so naturally.
I would
struggle and I say, honey, I can't see this. And you say, okay, I'll read it. And wow. Then guess what? Wow. That encouraged you to go back to school.
That's right. Oh goodness gracious alive.
Right?
I know.
And you went, so we were both going back to school at the
same time.
Your master's.
Yes.
And I was getting my bachelor's.
Yes.
And we helped each other.
That was a lot of fun. Yeah, that was a lot of fun being in school together.
That was just 5 years ago.
That was
three years ago.
And that was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed being there with you in school.
Yeah.
And you know, and then, you know, it's funny because I don't know if you thought, well, I'll ask you the question. So when you finally realized that your vision was not going to come back.
Yeah.
What did you think about your life to come?
I just never thought about it. I just thought, as it's coming, we'll figure it out together. And it was a time when we couldn't travel anymore.
Right.
Because of my body couldn't take high altitude. My ears were affected because of the disease.
Right.
But we didn't let that stop us. We did more road trips,
chasing sunsets.
Chasing sunsets.
Doing things that we could do without getting on a plane.
Yeah. Traveling. So you were always there for me. And I never had to worry about what tomorrow was going to bring.
And then came NFB.
Yes, National Federation of the Blind. And I said I wanted to be the chapter president.
So
another hairball.
Right. And Stan, guess what? You're going to be board member number one.
Yes, you're going to be on my board. And then came Blind Connect, where I said, honey, I think I'm going to take all of the cooking that I've done professionally, and I want to give it to my blind community.
So I have a question for you. Now, you've been a chef. You're a classically trained chef. You're a master chef. You've cooked around the world.
Yes.
And now you're coming into an arena of people who are blind and they cannot see. And now you're going to teach them how to cook. Now, you have very little vision yourself.
Yes.
And you've got to handle knives and heat and all of that. And now you're going into an arena where there are some people who have zero vision, none. How did you feel about that?
Well, first of all, just because we're blind doesn't mean that we want to have food cooked for us all the time or meals brought over to us. We want to have independence and we want to be able to do it ourselves. And so being blind, I realized that. I thought, well, I want to get out and do things. I want to be able to still cook, but now I have to figure out how to do it safely. So I think I could teach them with my skill and with their skill of accessibility and mobility, we could put these two together and I could teach them. So when I taught a young man how to make brownies and gave him an egg to crack, for the first time he had ever seen or held an egg in his whole life, did more to me that moment gave me more gratitude and awareness than traveling all around the world.
Wow.
Because he took something so simple as an egg. An egg is the most simplest ingredients that we have in the world. Most common ingredient that we have. Every culture uses an egg. And he never ever had held or cracked an egg. And we were able to experience that together. And I was a part of that. And I taught him how to do that. That was amazing. And I thought, you know what? I want to do this now. This is something that I want to do. And so with skill and care and patience, I'm now able to, through Angela's House Blind Connect, I'm able to step in the kitchen with them via Zoom now.
I know Zoom.
I have a Zoom class on cooking in the dark with Regina, Chef Regina. And it's amazing that they're able to do this. So I'm able to give back to a community that is sort of a, pardon the pun, invisible community that people don't think about. Chefs don't think about.
Right.
And so I'm able to step in this new arena and take on this amazing
venture.
A new venture. Another new venture.
And here's the interesting thing about this new venture. You know, when you first told me that they wanted you to, they wanted you to teach this class to the blind, I thought, oh boy, here we go. Because I go back to the time that I came home one day, and I came home from the office, and it was late in the afternoon, and I walked into the house, and I walked in through the kitchen, and the stove was on, the burner was on. And you were nowhere to be found. And I thought, huh? And it was warm in the kitchen. I remember turning the burner off and went upstairs. And you were upstairs doing something. And I thought, honey, you know you left the burner on? You said, oh, no, I didn't know that. And I thought, okay. So he's going to be teaching a class on cooking.
Yes.
But you know what? I trust you.
Yes.
And I know you're going to do the right thing.
Yes.
And so blindness, you know, although it's, you know, I'll tell you, in the beginning, I always thought that it was going to get better because the doctors thought that.
Mm-hmm.
And I held on to that for probably the first year. I kept thinking that one day your eyes are going to miraculously open and you're going to be able to see. But then I realized that I was holding on to something that might not ever happen. And how I had to ask myself, how am I going to be okay with this if it never gets better? And that was a change when I realized it doesn't have to get better.
So how does that speak to husband?
I remember that day that I thought that. I remember that particular day. When I came to that point of understanding that it's okay if it doesn't get better, because I remembered my vows. And I remember the things that I said, that, you know, that you are my wife, and that this is for better, for worse, for sickness and in health. But when we say those things in sickness and in health, we think everything is going to be healthy.
That's right. We do.
And so when sickness comes, and then, you know, as they say, as the doctors were saying, the only way that you're going to keep the vision that you do have is if you keep on with this chemotherapy, you know, every month. And I thought, okay, so this sickness is here to stay. Let me make the best out of this. Let's have fun through this. Okay, you got to go to chemotherapy every month. Let's make it a road trip. Let's have a good time. Let's figure out where we're going to have dinner together. Let's figure out what we're going to do on the drive back.
So we drive from Las Vegas to Los Angeles, and that's one way. How many miles?
It's 280 miles to UCLA.
So we have at least to do that trip twice a month.
Twice a month. 3.5 to 4 hours each way.
Yeah. Thank you, honey.
Is it fun to you?
I look forward
to it. I do too. Kind of a crazy way. I mean, you're going to go get chemotherapy. And I say to myself, okay, we're gonna have it's chemotherapy day. We're gonna have fun all the way there.
And I do have to remind you, honey, it's not like I'm looking forward to chemotherapy. I know you're planning the trip, but it's not. On the other side of that, that's me getting poked at least 3 times for a vein, and me sitting there with a poison going through my system.
I know.
So, but yeah, I look forward to our trip.
But you know, here's the interesting thing. I'm not gonna even ask you a question about this. I'll tell you. So I have learned that this is what I'm saying. This is how marriage is. I think this is what makes marriage fun. 3 days before your chemotherapy appointment. I know the chemotherapy appointment is coming.
Yeah.
So 3 days before the chemotherapy appointment is coming, I start conditioning myself. I take deep breaths and I start to say to myself, okay, Stan, give Regina all the room she needs to be a little snappy if she wants to be a little sad if she wants to be a little quiet if she wants to be. I give you all the space for 3 days up to chemotherapy to act a kook if you want to. It's okay if you're kooky. It's all right. So when you say, if it's 3 days beforehand and I say, hey, honey, so Saturday we're going to be heading to UCLA. And you say, I know. I don't want to go. It's okay. I'm all right. I'm okay with anything you do up to that point, because I realize that this is difficult. It's challenging. It's tough. It's not something that you want to do, but it's something that's necessary. But guess what? I always tell people when they say, wow, isn't it hard? Isn't it challenging to watch your wife go through chemotherapy and all? I say, every day that I have with her is another day that I have with her. And I want to make the best of it. Whether it's chemotherapy or anything else, I want to have fun with her.
Okay, I have a question.
Okay.
How did you feel when I was standing up there being the guest speaker for my undergrad for the African American graduation ceremony?
Well, you know, as I look back to a chance meeting with you at our parents' church 36 years ago, almost 37 years ago. And I look back at that day that I only took a part in that play for my mother because she was typing a paper for me. If she wasn't typing a paper for me, she probably wouldn't have asked me to be in it. She was typing the paper, and as she's typing, she says, Stan, will you take a part in this play? Well, yeah, I'm gonna say no as she's typing a paper for me. If I would not have said yes to taking a part in that play, and I had not pulled a piece of gum out of my pocket while we were sitting there waiting for us to do our parts, then I would not have been able to be the proud husband watching you stand before all those UNLV graduates giving a commencement speech. After having gone through 5 years of undergrad as a blind student, that was one of the most proud moments that I've had of being your husband. Because I think that, you know, all of the pieces of our life, you know, going from getting married and being engaged after 2 months, and then getting married a year and a half later, and then moving to Canada, and then traveling around the world, and then coming to Las Vegas, and then you losing your vision, and us learning to adapt to that, and then you saying, I want to go back to school, and then going through school with you, and then sitting in the audience as you spoke from a place of blindness. It's something that I never thought I'd see in my life with you. It was amazing.
I love you, honey.
I love you too.
How are you feeling, Stan?
Feeling really good, Regina. I have one more question for you. Well, maybe not really one more, but I have another question for you. So when we got on the plane and flew to Chicago so that I could graduate with my master's degree from Purdue University, how did you feel sitting in the audience, Regina?
Mm-hmm. Wow. Tears. I have tears.
I did too.
Well, I sat there seeing that my husband, that this is well deserved. It was more than a master's degree. It was like a life achievement. Mm-hmm. If I could have changed places with the chancellor that handed you that degree, I would have handed you a life achievement.
Wow.
For a marriage.
Wow. You know, I remember
being an amazing husband.
Thank you. That's because you're an amazing wife. I remember when I asked you to marry me on a certain day. And you said, well, honey, you said, Stan, we weren't married then. You said, Stan, well, before you graduate? And I said, no, I want to get married a week after I graduate from my undergrad. I want to get married a week after I get my undergrad because I don't want my girlfriend sitting at my graduation. I want my wife sitting at my graduation. Mm-hmm. And so then 30 years later, after that graduation, you were sitting in the audience at another graduation. Mm-hmm. And that was really a wonderful experience. Thank you. Thank you for choosing to be Mrs. E. Stanley.
Thank you for asking. I love you.